Welcome into the show. We got Eliza D. Napoli, transformation mindset, creativity coach, and author. She is also a singer, songwriter, and hypnotherapist. She's a graduate of the University of London from back in 98 on comparative religion, and also hosts the Dare to Be Seen music podcast. So welcome to the show, first off.
Thank you for having me.
So yeah, we were on one of the many podcasts, networking, you know, sites, and it was like, yeah, this makes sense. This is going to be a perfect, helpful study on, you know, it's more than just on careers and mental health. It's on everyone accepting what they want to be and going out and getting it, you know, instead of just saying, oh, it's beneath me, it's beyond me, I can't reach any kind of goal that I want in some capacity. So you're based in New Zealand. Is that where you were originally from, or you're just relocated there?
Relocated here. I'm originally from Italy. Lived in the UK as well and Ireland. So I've been country hopping, if you like. And nice. At the moment, I am in New Zealand for the foreseeable future.
Totally. And more recently, a year ago, you became a certified life coach. Why do you think you decided to evolve towards that from making the step from beyond a hypnotherapist and clinical coach and then going straight into life coach?
Well, I mean, I always want to, I'm a bit of addicted to learning. I really like learning. It just gives me a buzz. Nice. And I get quite bored, you know, if I don't do that. So I've been doing hypnotherapy for a really long time. And one of the things that I found very important was actually, you know, the consultation with my clients first, you know, before engaging in any therapy. And I found that while studying different kinds of forms of psychotherapy and while finding them very interesting and useful, the coaching was more about the present rather than looking at the past. And both are important. But that was missing from what I was doing. And I wanted to ask better questions and be more able to guide people towards a better future, you know. So I thought, well, coaching is very future-oriented, present and future-oriented. And so I started exploring it. And it seemed like a perfect complement to what I was already doing anyway. Not that different, just an add-on.
Very nice. So more recently, you got a free masterclass upcoming on free secrets to stop stage fright and perform with confidence. Were you already kind of thinking of doing something like that? Or was that just a more recent breakout?
Well, as you may or may not know, so I wrote this book a few years ago on how to overcome performance anxiety, and on the back of that, I decided to do an online course about it, which helps people that don't want to do it all themselves. Basically, you know, if they want more help, they can do my course. And then I thought, well, for people that don't know me, I should do something that introduces my work for free. Because, you know, there's a lot of people saying they can do this and that and the other. And how do you know that they're the real deal, you know? So I decided to offer something for free that would introduce the work and be actually valuable, not just some kind of webinar that, you know, talks up what I do and then says free, you know, sign up for my course. Sure, you can sign up for my course at the end, but you also get something, you know, if you just watch this masterclass and you can see that what I'm doing is actually working. So that's the idea behind the masterclass, and it basically offers a very practical approach to managing nerves just before performance. So it contains a pre-performance ritual, if you like, that helps to to diffuse any panic that may be coming, up, and to feel more comfortable being on stage to start with.
Very nice. So, you know, before you had your podcast where you interview female musicians and singers, were you already kind of experimenting with music? Is this a fun college hobby or?
I've been playing music forever. It's my other passion. So psychology, personal development on one hand, and music on the other hand, they go hand in hand, and I have been going hand in hand for the past 20 years. So music, I guess, I don't really know which one came first. Maybe music actually came first, but I've been doing that for a long time, playing various instruments and composing, and I can't really see my life without it, to be honest. In fact, if anything, it's the kind of the other way around, meaning that the whole performance anxiety specialization that I have comes from having suffered myself from that quite badly in my 20s. And not finding a solution and almost giving up my music career because it was awful getting on stage and terrible experience. And I was a bit of a, you know, at a loss. I didn't know what to do. And so that's what pushed me to find a solution.
Well, I gotcha. Yeah. We all take it in various waves and everything. And sometimes, like you say, when you're left with such a terrible aftertaste of just like, man, I've been wasting my time. I've been not liking the feedback I've been seeing. I'm getting, yeah. Were you fortunate enough to at least avoid working with unprofessional people, or was that part of it?
Unprofessional people? What do you mean?
Just like music producers or anything, or...
Well, I mean, you find that everywhere, you know, in every...
Sometimes it's just played at a bad venue or whatever. I'm not trying to make this a negative podcast. It's just...
Oh, sure. Yeah, I mean, you know, like everybody, I guess I've had good and bad experiences with that. But one thing that I've learned from it is to pretty much... maybe too much rely on myself. I mean, I think it's actually important to collaborate with other people, but you got to find the right people that you can trust. And until you do that, it's actually, I think, a good idea to learn the craft yourself, because even if you don't, if you're not going to be, you know, the perfect mixing engineer, the perfect producer, you can't do everything. But even if you can't do those things, at least if you know a bit of the craft, you understand what's behind it, then it's easier to find the right people to work with you. Mm-hmm. And because they're not going to, you know, you know if they are saying something that makes sense or doesn't.
Right. No, very cool. Because it can be rough. So... All together, everyone's got just ways to like avoid just unpleasantries and just the rough aspects of life. What are some, you know, without giving away any key steps of your various courses, what are some key insights and just routines that you've noticed have been always done, been a good way of avoiding just self-confidence and reestablishing just taking a breather for a moment. Like, for instance, there's many ways to like reduce stress by, you know, taking a few breaks, walking around, you know, just a long deep breath. What are some methods that you've noticed is like very beyond helpful, totally recommend?
So are you talking about performance anxiety specifically?
That or just stress reducers or just...
Well, you see, this is the thing, you know, stress isn't actually a thing. You know, it's a response to events that we perceive as threatening. Whether they are threatening or not doesn't really matter. What matters is what we think, you know, what we perceive them as being. So if, you know, the same event happens to me and you, and you tell yourself a story about it, or you're triggered in such a way that it feels threatening to you, then you're going to have a fight or flight or freeze response. And I might not, you know. So the same event can have very different effects on me and you, depending on whether we get triggered by it, whether we have tagged it, if you like, as being threatening. So so the most important thing, the first thing we need to do is actually switch off the fight or flight response if this event is not threatening. And it's pretty normal, you know, to have this response. We need it to survive. You know, if we didn't have any anxiety, we wouldn't actually have survived this long. And the problem is when the anxiety is too high and persistent and inconsistent to the actual level of threat that there is. So what we need to do is we need to stop this fight or flight or freeze response. Now, there's a couple of ways that are really effective, one of which is not really well known. It's not really well known. And the one that I talk about in my masterclass, and I explain why this works in more detail, is actually quite unusual, though very simple. And it's consists in aerobic exercise. And with that, I mean jumping up and down, getting your heart rate up.
Nice.
you know, whether it's like going up the stairs 10 times or dancing or whatever it is, you need to get your heart rate up for a few minutes, because that tells your body that you are fighting the enemy, if you like, or running away from the enemy, and therefore you are dealing with the threat. And after that exercise is over, then it means the threat is over. So you are basically telling the amygdala, which is the control, the alarm system of the brain, that threat is over and now we're safe again. So that's one way. The other way is deep diaphragmatic breathing. Now, what that is breathing with your mouth closed. It's important that your mouth is closed and you breathe through the nose only. And you take a deep breath and say you count up to four. The out breath needs to be longer than the in breath. So there needs to be eight or longer. And you need to do this for 5 minutes. If you're having a panic attack, it needs to be 5 minutes. If you only do it for 30 seconds, it's not going to work. And the thing about it is that when people are in a panic, they don't want to do this because they breathe very shallow.
Right.
And so they need to like learn how to do this before the panic sets in, so they become more familiar with the technique. And when it actually happens, they know what to do. And then learn how to recognize the panic itself. Now, if you combine these two together, now that's a pretty powerful combo. And once you have done this and you're calm, then you can use things such as positive affirmation, positive self-talk. But if you use the positive self-talk before you've calmed down, it won't work. Because your brain is just, that's what happens when you're in fight or flight. The inhibitory signals are sent to your prefrontal cortex, which basically means that you ignore anything, any nuanced way of thinking. You are just in black
panic,
and white
panic,
survival
panic. Yeah.
Mode, life or death, yeah.
We'll return after these messages.
Hello and welcome to Culture Shocked, the pop culture podcast brought to you by four aging millennials and our outdated opinions. Join us every Tuesday as we discuss movies, TV, games, and even music, new and old.
Dude, what do you think you're doing?
Are you seriously trying to record a promo without us right now?
Well, yeah.
Dude, you can't just do the promo by yourself. Who's going to listen to that?
Yeah, and you probably haven't even told them that we're a pop culture podcast where we always agree on everything. For instance, the Sam Raimi trilogy easily being the best of the Spider-Man movies.
No. But I think we can all agree that Jaws is a classical masterpiece.
Nope, don't like that. But we do all agree that the sequel trilogy of Star Wars is the best in the Skywalker saga, right, guys?
That comment is so ridiculous. I don't even know where to
Anyways, that'll do it from all of us here at Culture Shock. Thanks for listening.
Hey, it's Brent Pope, the host of Breakfast with Brent Pope. You've seen me on some of your favorite TV shows saying things like, "Give it up, Jimmy. You got to sink this putt to win." On Breakfast with Brent Pope, I sit down with guests from the entertainment world and we do it all over breakfast. Or should I say Breakfast? Every week on Breakfast, you get inside Hollywood info and tips, great breakfast recs and booty debates. Most of all, you get the most delightful 30 minutes of your week. So dig in. It's breakfast time. Listen at breakfast.com, Apple Podcasts, or wherever fine podcasts are found.
Do you ever find yourself thinking about who would win in a fight between Goku and Superman? Hi, I'm James Gavsey, and on the Who Would Win show, me and my co-host Ray ignore anything important happening in the outside world and debate fictional battles between characters from comics, movies, and video games.
We got a new show every week, and almost always am I the winner.
Yeah, not true, Ray.
In the past, we've discussed such matches as Captain America versus Darth Vader, Solid Snake versus the Iron Giant, classic matchups like RoboCop versus Terminator, and even the Muppets versus Sesame Street.
That one was crazy. So if you're a fan of geek culture and love a spirited debate, check out the Who Would Win show wherever you get your podcasts, or check us out at whowouldwinshow.com.
We let things pile up in the DVR. We add them to our queues. We wait for the DVDs and Blu-rays. We time shift. The Time Shifters Podcast. Sci-fi, horror, fantasy, superheroes, comedy, action, film, television, maybe some not-so-current events. Find us on iTunes or at timeshifterspodcast.com.
Cool thing about Blind Knowledge is we are in multiple countries. We are worldwide, all across the globe. We are in the U.S. We are in the U.K. We are in Canada, Germany, India, Japan. We're in Australia, y'all. BlindKnowledge.com. Now back to the feature presentation.
It is interesting. It's like we need to just slow down, and yet it's hard for the brain to cycle down because we're letting fear take us over, and the thought of shortness of breath, oh, why would you do that? You know, it's tough to kind of get everyone to just kind of just settle down and just like take the process, try it out.
Yeah.
I will admit I've done certain breathing exercises, and yes, it is uncomfortable at first, but it's totally worth it because you're kind of doing a reset in a way.
Mm-hmm. Yes, for sure.
Backtracking a little bit, who were some of your mentors and other inspirations that helped with your major?
Well, a lot of people, but yeah, that's, anyways, I guess, like, you know, close to home. Yeah, sure. Some people are pretty famous and some people are not. I guess the most famous guy is Tony Robbins. I'm a fan of Tony Robbins, although, you know, he can be a bit over the top and very American. But if you kind of forget about that and go beyond that, there's also a reason, you know, why he does that. He uses NLP. He doesn't say he uses NLP, but that's basically what he does. And he's learned a lot of hypnotic techniques, but he doesn't call it that because, you know, people are scared of hypnosis. They don't understand it. But his techniques are very much very similar to what I do, except, of course, he uses them in a group setting with a lot of people. And that in itself is very effective because it kind of puts people on the spot and it makes it hard for them to run away or hide. A one-on-one session is easier to hide or run away, right? So, but if you take the kind of the hype away from it, a lot of what he's talking about is very sound. So he's one. Another one is Eckhart Tolle. So Eckhart Tolle is famous, if you like, in the spiritual community, but he's he is famous for writing a book called The New Earth, and he explains kind of Buddhist principles, if you like, to the Western world. So I very much like him, and I'm inspired by his message. And also finally, Terry Reel, who's a couples marriage therapist. Now, I am not a couples counselor, but I really think I use a lot of relational life therapy tools, which are Terry Reel, it's Terry Reel's school of psychotherapy, to help people understand how maladaptive behaviors happen, what happens when we have experienced trauma, and how to get better through our relationships, because at the end of the day, we are relational creatures and we're not just living alone and on this earth. So I find Terry Reel's approach very refreshing. And he also talks a lot about patriarchy and individualism and different ways of thinking that help us in our personal development journey much more than we may think, because of the paradigm shift that he talks about, going from me and you to us consciousness, mm-hmm. and working together as a team to solve problems.
Very much so. So you've opened up a good door there. Much like with any kind of health or fitness or even food, you know, you do want to make sure that when you're getting some kind of consultation, that people got credentials and they're using terminology that isn't outdated or not exactly the same. Mm-hmm. And you just mentioned, you know, Tony Robbins, that is an example of, you know, a more mainstream approach to that. And he's using a different label, even though he's kind of doing a similar formula like you. And what are some other, you know, without naming names necessarily, you know, what are some other keywords to kind of be on the lookout for, and just kind of clarify that those looking for life coaching is like, okay, this isn't the exact, you know, they're using this keyword, it's not the exact as what I'm doing here, and vice versa. Because I've had life and fitness coaches on here before, and they've noted, it's like, okay, you know, you can tell the difference between someone who's making sure that, you know, they're an expert on this field, as opposed to, I know a bunch about this, so therefore I know it all. And that's not true, you know.
Well, I mean, the thing is about life coaching is that you don't have to know it. It's not a mentorship. You know, it's actually a life coach needs to ask the right questions. It's more about that, and being non-judgmental and encouraging, and believing in the client's capacity to find their own answers. So a life coach is not a mentor or someone who's supposed to know it all. It's someone who instead helps the client get their own answers. That's really like what a good life coach is supposed to do. And mm-hmm. if someone says, oh, they're an expert on this and that and the other, well, that's a different job, isn't it?
Right. Okay. Well, it's just good to know. Because
yes, and I think, you know, you can't really be a full expert on anything. I mean, this is subjects are constantly evolving. There's constant learning to be done. And anyone who claims to know it all is a bit of a red flag, if you ask me.
Oh, totally. It's just sometimes you got to go through like a maze of, and then like it takes a simple reread and you're like, what? Oh, that grammar's already off. So I, you know, the answer, the distrust, I mean, was right.
I would say, you know, if you're looking for a life coach, just, it's not necessarily about the qualifications, but you want to read about customer reviews, because at the end of the day, you know, if someone is good at their job, they're going to have good reviews. If they're not, they're going to have bad reviews, or they're not going to have any. You know, and that's really the key. You could have a bunch of qualifications, and of course it's good to have qualifications, I'm not saying it's not, but it's not enough to have that. It's about what can you actually do,
right?
So I think it's important to check the background of the person and make sure that, yeah, they're also paying attention to their website, because, you know, if you're not paying attention to your own website, you know, if your grammar is off, you know, you could still be a great therapist, but you're not really, if you're not paying attention to these things, perhaps there's something there to be wary of. You know, obviously it's not always the case, but you could, I think, you know, as a client, you need to be very, you need to trust this person. So I would say, make sure that you have a call first. That's, you know, a lot of life coaches have calls for free that you can connect to this, to the other person, and make sure that they're the right for you, and not just go on a qualification or on what's written on the website. Make sure you get firsthand experience.
Gotcha. Okay, very cool. What are some other master classes you're thinking of teaching very soon?
Well, I do on the music front. I teach songwriting already. I also do a workshop, an in-person workshop on performance anxiety. And I actually have a free, well, not free, but very low cost course that I am creating. And this is about, is related to performance anxiety, but really is related to confidence in general and making sure that we change the negative self-talk that's in our head that stops us from doing the things we want to do and living our lives fully, to more empowering self-talk. And so I've got an exercise that I always teach all of my clients. And because I do that, I thought I should make this into a course because I teach it anyway.
Right.
And if it's available, you know, to everyone, and you don't have to be a client to do it, then that would be beneficial for me and for them. For me, because of course the person that does it gets to know what I do, but for them, because they actually get a benefit from it. So my philosophy is also always trying to find win-win situations, you know, positive situations for everyone. So that's a course that that's in the works. Possibly a course on social anxiety as well has been suggested to me. So that might be the next thing after that one.
Very nice. What are some, you know, you've been to various universities. For those wanting to study this profession, are there any other guidance you would give them?
So are we talking about hypnotherapy, psychotherapy, life coaching? What are we talking about?
Hypnotherapy.
Hypnotherapy. So hypnotherapy, there's a lot of different courses in the world, and there's different approaches as well. So in the UK, I know about the UK and America. In the UK, the approach tends to be more theoretical and less practical, and America is much more practical, less theoretical. I've done actually both, and I think that both are really important because you need to know the theory behind what you do, but you also need to really know how to do it. What I would suggest, you know, if you could do both, I would suggest there's a college in London. let me remember what the name is. It's by Adam Eason, and it's the Anglo-European College of Therapeutic Hypnosis, I think it's called. That one is very good in terms of theory. Adam Eason is an excellent hypnotherapist, and is accredited as well. And then the other school that I highly recommend is the Hypnotherapy Institute of Northern California. That one's excellent, and that one will teach you really practical techniques to help your clients. And one of the things that they do, which is amazing, is that a lot of the training is actually done under hypnosis. So you will learn how to do this, and it will be very, it will be the very proof that it works, you know, because it's using the techniques that you're going to use yourself.
Right.
But I think if you can do both, that then you're going to be an excellent hypnotherapist.
Okay, very nice. Are there any kind of just other words of advice you'd like to leave with us?
Well, I think one of the things that I keep on saying to my clients is about understanding how the mind works. And the most important thing to remember, I think, or one of the most important things to remember, is that what we say to ourselves, it becomes immediately transformed into images in our mind, whether we like it or not, mm-hmm. or whether we're aware of it or not. And then those images get transformed into feelings, and then those feelings get transformed into sensations, and then make you do stuff. You know, you start acting on your feelings, and then the loop turns back on creating thoughts and self-talk. So the thing, though, is a lot of us use negative language, which is pretty normal for most of us. The problem with negative language, though, is that when you use it, your brain will create the very thing you don't want. So, for example, if I said to you now, don't think about an ambulance on fire on a hill. Just think about anything else, but not an ambulance on fire on a hill. Just don't think about an ambulance on fire on a hill. Well, what are you thinking? You're thinking about the ambulance on fire on a hill, because the not is just, it's not an object. It's word. You know, it's just something that denies a real object. So when people say, I don't want to get fat, I don't want this, I don't want that, they are creating the very thing they are suggesting to their subconscious that that's actually what they want.
Creating a negative realm.
Yeah. So it's very important to be aware of this and eliminate the negative by asking yourself, what would I rather want? What would I rather have then? You know, I don't want to be fat. Okay, what would I rather be then? I'd rather be slim. I'd rather be fit. I'd rather be full of energy. So try and frame everything, to flip everything on its head. You can start from the negative, but flip it on its head and then think about what you'd rather have. So think about what you want, not what you don't. That's the nugget.
Gotcha. Anything you'd like to promote?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I've got a free book that I'd like to offer to your listeners. And I can send the link to it. Is elisadinapoli.com /jacked/jacked. So JACKED. And you'll find a free book there. And otherwise, you can also find my free masterclass on elisadinapoli.com. Just scroll all the way to the bottom, and you'll get a link from a free masterclass as well.
Very nice. Thank you so much for being on here.
Well, thank you for having me.
Follow us on the web on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. The podcast is available on Podbean, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Anchor, Apple, and anywhere else podcasts are available. Feel free to review our show and leave comments on any of those sites. Thanks a million for listening. It's a Jacked Up.